All right, welcome in. Cube Show Podcast, a college football podcast, comes to you on Sundays. Trying to bring you a little extra college football content each and every week on Sunday because we know there's not enough of it, and we want to try to give it to you. We recap things that happened throughout the course of the week in season. We go back through each and every game. We let you know what we saw in the film because we review it, and we give you what was taking place on the field. So we did have one SEC spring game this weekend. We're going to get to that. We're going to break it down. We'll start our spring team previews this week. It's going to be the Missouri Tigers. They were on the field. A couple other things happening in our college football before we get to that. Obviously, college football playoff. Now, it was announced Friday or reported Friday that commissioners, presidents, ADs have come to an agreement that this new 14-team model most likely going to be put in place in 2 years, and the new revenue distribution has been put in place. I don't love it. I don't like it. I don't blame the big boys at play here. SEC and Big Ten, you can throw your weight around. You can drop some elbows on some people. Go for it. Have at it. That's the business portion of this. The non-business portion of this is we continue to move down a path where we're pushing the little guys out. We don't want them to be a part of this anymore. I don't love that. I don't think that's great for the sport. I don't think it's great for college football. And then you hear some different comments from college commissioners and people in power positions about where the NCAA tournament's going to head today. Today's Selection Sunday, St. Patrick's Day. And can't pinch me, by the way. Thank you, Roback. But I don't like hearing about how these automatic bids are being given to teams in non-competitive situations, or these automatic bids are going to teams that, if you go look at, you know, Syracuse in 21 or UCLA in 18, whatever they were, that they made these runs to the Final Four, the Elite Eight, or the championship game, that's how competitive the top 50 really is. I don't like hearing that. I love the fact that these mid-major teams have something to play for, and it's a berth in the tournament. If you want to expand it to get your mid-level Power 5 teams in and have a whole another round and kind of wipe the play-in round out for that with a whole new round, cool, go for it. Have at it. But don't take the AQs away, man. Like, that is what made this tournament so special for so long. And I know not a ton of them have won it. That's fine. But how many more eyeballs, how much more attention, how much more noise did it make when Fairleigh Dickinson won, when Butler went to the Final Four? I mean, that's, you know, George Mason, whatever it is, Loyola Chicago. Like, we fall in love with those teams in March, and people start rooting for them. We pay attention to it. We want to see if it can happen. Like, that's – there's a lot more out of – out. There's a lot more folks out there that are Mercer or Fairleigh Dickinson or Butler or Drake than there are Duke and North Carolina and Kansas in the real world. There just are. It's the reality of it. So we like cheering for those teams. We like seeing it. And I just think you take a big fabric away of it. And like, we had people on our show, Jay Bills was on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning on Jocks, and he was like, why should they get it? Why do they deserve it? Do you want to see that? Do you watch them? And it's just, wow. You get a little bit surprised at some commentary like that, thinking that let's just push the smaller guys aside and welcome everybody else in. But that's a lot of the direction of college football or college athletics right now. It's kind of where we're headed. The big business portion of it is taking over. So we said on this podcast for a while, we're going to go to 14. It's not going to take long. We'll probably get 2 years at 12. We'll go to 14. And then I'm sure a conversation about 16 will begin to happen. And they're going to continue to squeeze that little bit amount of money. I mean, Notre Dame and the other G5 teams are going to get $2 million. A piece. You're talking SEC Big Ten teams getting $23, $21, $22 million, something in that range. So they're going to continue to squeeze it until the other people say, you know what, like, we can't just keep doing this. We've got to go find a way to earn something, and everybody will move on in their separate ways, and we'll have AFC, NFC, Big Ten, SEC, and we'll just go forward. So there's parts of it that I don't love. There are, you know, the geographical portion, the rivalry portion. I just feel like we're getting further and further away from that. And it's a large piece of what made college football great. And yes, the ratings are up. We're also, I believe right now, accidentally in an NFL news cycle, so to speak, inside college football. Well, if the guardrails go up on the portal and NIL is sort of harnessed, some of that's going to be taken away. And we're not going to have player X to the portal or playoff expansion conversations or realignment conversations every single day now for two consecutive off seasons. That's going to give you that noise, and all the mouthpieces are going to want to be talking about it. And it's going to make more people interested in it, and it's going to have people wondering why they're not watching it or paying attention to it. When that part goes away, once everything is rearranged, so to speak, is the popularity going to hold? Because, yes, the ratings are great right now. But as I have explained when I was on with T-Bob and Aaron Murray on their podcast last week, ratings are not made for most likely you and me. Some of you watching this might not be college football diehards. And God bless you. We appreciate it. We're glad you're here. Whether you want to learn more about the sport or a certain team, whatever that is, thank you. Please subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. But also, ratings, in my opinion, are made for people like my wife, who she'll watch Auburn games. She's an Auburn graduate, and she's excited about it. If there's another big game on and she doesn't have a lot going on, she'll watch it. She's never against it. But she go out of her way to watch it? Does she seek it out? By God, she sought out that Super Bowl this year. That's why a ratings bump with a Taylor Swift effect is a big deal, because it actually moves that meter. We had a girl down the street invite us to their Super Bowl party. She did a Taylor Swift-themed Super Bowl party. She couldn't tell you the two teams that were in it. She didn't care, but they cared about the Super Bowl. So whether it's Michigan, Alabama, a player, a transfer, a coach, a record, or a Fairleigh Dickinson or a George Mason, all of a sudden these people come in and watch, because why is everybody talking about that? Why is it cool? Why is it interesting? Maybe we want to watch. For me, my opinion is that's why ratings are important. It's not to show you the true popularity of the sport. It's to show you that more people that didn't have to, or maybe normally wouldn't have, see, I view myself as someone who has to watch football. I said this back in the NFL. Like, when people said we were going to quit watching the NFL, the things that would have to happen to me and my family to make me stop watching the NFL, I can't even share with you here. And hell, we're on YouTube and podcast. My point is, ratings are about the people that you bring in that may or may not have watched this game. That's why ratings are important. And when that number's inflated above the average or above what you thought it was going to be, there are probably reasons that people like that came to watch that game. That's why it's important. And I believe this 24/7, 365 news cycle around college football that we've been living in for over 2 years now is a major reason why we're seeing a bump, or at least it's holding on strong. It's probably not going to continue like that forever. Because once, and I had Josh Pate on McElroy and Cubic Friday when Greg was out, and I asked him that, and he's like, no, I agree with you 100%. He said, once this whole cycle of craziness sort of slows down, why are people still going to be into it? Why are those other people, the casuals as he would call them, going to continue coming back to some of these games? They're probably not, is the answer. So I'm worried about a lot of the direction. We're going to get better games? Yeah. Conference is going to be big. I'm pumped about Texas and Oklahoma and the SEC. I love it. I feel like they belong. I feel like they'll fit in. It's going to give us more competitive games. I'll do better games on the weekend. Totally excited about that. But like Mark Rick said long ago, I feel like there's room for everyone. There's enough to go around. And even though we're on very unequal footing right now, it feels like some people are getting locked out of the club. And that's not always cool. So as you know, each and every week, we're brought to you by Wickles Pickles. Wickedly delicious. We keep the jar here in the office, in the studio. We got it going for you. Wickles are beautiful. They are wonderful. Had our Sunday school class over last Sunday night, and I cooked some Kaneka sausage, and I pulled Wickles out and did a toothpick into each piece of Kaneka with the Wickles on top. Oh, buddy. There wasn't a person at that party that said that wasn't a home run, and they wanted me to make more. I was like, I'm out of Kaneka. Sorry, but I got more Wickles if you guys just want some of those. So we snacked on a few of those instead. Wickles.com, check them out. Appreciate them for being a sponsor of the show. All right, Missouri spring game. Lowell Galito, Aaron Murray on the call for this thing. I think there were some good takeaways from the game. And I think a couple of the things that we're going to take a look at that we were trying to figure out about this team, we got some answers to. Let's just start at quarterback. Brady Cook, a little bit more confident, a little bit more command. Let's not keep in mind that this team that went 11-2 last year, 6-2 in conference, finished 8th in the country, won a New Year's Six bowl game, has 68% of their production returning, 79% of that on offense. Brady Cook, a big part of it. Only 58 on defense. They also don't play a road game until October the 5th. We'll go through that schedule a little bit later. They're going to face 6 teams that have a new head coach on that schedule. But quarterbacks and Brady Cook. He was in a three-man race at this point last year. He was in a three-man race through the first couple games of the season. Even though I do think Coach Drinkwitz kind of knew he was the guy, he wanted to at least see what else he had in Sam Horn and some of the other cats. So it wasn't just his show. It's his show now. And from what I've been told and what I've heard, that has grown in his game across the course of this spring and this offseason. Situational football is an area that I think he's grown in. Third downs, red zones, understanding the clock and the score and things of that nature. I think that's an area that he's gotten more confident and more comfortable. I think the checkdowns, the reads, how to get through those reads and progressions, knowing where to check things down to and when. I think he's come a long way there, and that's been something where he's improved. So I do think that when you look at sort of the rest of that room, though, there has to be some concerns. Whether you take a look at Aiden Glover or you take a look at Harold Blood Jr., I don't think there's a ton of confidence in that spot right now. After Brady Cook, enter Drew Pine. And I think Drew Pine, when you see coming out of spring that there's not a clear number two and there's maybe a little bit of lack of confidence in everybody else in that room, he actually becomes a massive get, in my opinion. It doesn't mean he's going to start games. It doesn't mean he's going to push Brady Cook. But if you were to lose Cook for a series or a half or a two-week span, all of a sudden you got a guy with a ton of confidence and a ton of college football experience that can come in and handle everything that they want to do. So I think that's a pickup. Of all these transfers we're going to talk about that not a lot of people are going to spend a ton of time on, that's actually a pretty good one and could end up being massive for Missouri. You hope it doesn't have to be. You hope it's one that they never have to look at and say, whew, glad we got him. However, if they do have to go to him, it's going to end up being a massive pickup. All right, in front of Brady Cook, the offensive line was one we were a little bit worried about. Xavier Delgado, Javon Foster are going to be gone. But Connor Tolleson ends up being Brady Cook's number one pick in the draft. I love this, by the way. This wins points with me for Brady Cook. I think this shows you a little bit about Tolleson as the center on this football team and their relationship. And I understand Brady probably did this a little bit out of fun because it's his guy. But still, either way, I love the fact that you go draft your center first. That is fantastic because they drafted teams by position. And my understanding was a couple of the ways that this draft went down showed you why some of the scholarship guys who may not get in the run that they think they should getting some walk-ons taken in front of them, and apparently they learned a lot about this team and some of the individuals through that draft. But Armon Membu is going to be back at tackle, 360-pound power clean. He's clocked 20 miles per hour on the GPS. If you watched Read and React on the SEC Network last year, he made the block party almost weekly. He is incredible. He's going to be the best right tackle returning in the SEC, in my opinion. You got Cam Johnson at right guard. We mentioned Tolleson at center. Caden Green has come in from Oklahoma and lived up to all the expectations at left tackle. And I watched a little bit of him in the spring game. He looked fine to me. And I will say, one of my concerns would be with what's next at tackle. And you see a couple of those guys struggling, not necessarily confident in if things were to go a different direction at tackle. Javon Richardson got some run over there. That didn't look good. The second, third string tackles that I saw, not a strength of this football team. So, yes, you get a guy in Caden Green in that's going to handle his business, but you also need to stay healthy at that spot. But I do think with Green kind of an easy fill-in and you're not really sure what's going to go on at left guard, keep an eye on Logan Reichert because he's a kid that came in the 360s. He's down to the 340s, apparently a monster in the weight room. If that light continues to sort of come on for him, he could be a guy that helps add a little more physicality to this Missouri offensive line and helps make them a strength of the football team. I'm excited to see if he can sort of morph into that before fall gets here or even during the fall. So I think right now you would say this group has a chance to be a strength of the football team. The depth's not there, but hell, nobody has a ton of depth on the offensive line anymore because all the movement. So I think what I saw in the game, especially the pass pro from the first group, looked great. I was excited about it. And when you add to that the tight ends that this group's going to be able to roll out, Brett Norfleet, he had a pancake down near the goal line. He rolled up a defensive end. Like, I'm telling you, Norfleet is going to be basically the Cade Stover at Ohio State of the last few years for the next 2 years in college football. He's going to be the most enjoyable blocking tight end that you're going to see week in and week out. The guy just loves to get after it. He's so enjoyable to watch. I don't care if he catches two balls all year. He's a grinder, man. And he extends that offensive line. And it's something we're going to get into here in a few minutes about how this tight end group makes this offense that much more difficult to defend by doing a lot of different things well. But I like the other parts of the group, too. You saw Tyler Stevens a couple grabs. You saw Jordan Harris, who's a little bit of a bigger body out there. Stevens feels more like your flex tight end. Harris a little bit thicker. But they have a good group. They have options there, numbers there, different guys that can help in different ways. So I love the tight end room. The running back room, it's what we talked about. I mean, we mentioned Nate Noel going and getting him from App State. And I'll say this. I thought Nate looked a little thicker in pads in the game next to a bunch of SEC guys than maybe I expected him to. Because you hear 190 pounds, you're like, uh-oh, 190 pounds at running back. Like, can he survive? And you heard Aaron Murray and the guys on the call talking about they called schools that played against him and sort of asked around about, can he hold up? Is he going to be okay? And they got a thumbs up or a check mark from everybody that they called. So this is a kid, 541 touches, 3,074 yards in his career. That's carries, by the way, 50 receptions, 272 yards, 18 rushing touchdowns. I mean, he's averaged 8.2, 14.2, 9.7, and 15.7 per carry in his career. He is explosive. He's going to be a home run hitter. They have had 1-2 punches at tailbacks before, and I think they're going to have a little bit of that again because you guys know I've talked about it. I broke down the film of Georgia State transfer Marcus Carroll. Massive quads, big, strong kid. He can handle the load, can be even more north-south than Noel can. The key with Nate Noel is he comes from App. So he ran the stretch play. You don't play at App unless you know how to run the stretch play at running back. It's what they've done forever. And he's very adept with that, just like Cody Schrader was last year. So the more I go through this, you begin to see that more positions for Missouri this year might even be an upgrade over what they were a season ago. Because the wide receiver spot is one that they're very excited about. The depth at this position is off the freaking charts. Apparently, drinking these guys have been watching 2019 Alabama with that group of receivers, Judy and Ruggs and Smith and those guys. And I'm not saying that they're that Waddle, but just how to use this kind of depth at wide receiver. Luther Burden's the guy. We know he can do it all. He can do everything. Mookie Cooper was somebody who Drinkwitz tried to tell us about in spring last year. Basically saying, listen, Mookie's a dude now. He can do some things. Just watch out. He's explosive. And he proved that. Theo Weiss comes in from Oklahoma. He's a little bit more do-it-all. But you saw, if you watched that spring game closely, Theo Weiss was lined up in the slot a little bit more than normal. So they're even moving him around. The versatility of this offense is going to be incredible. Because I already mentioned flex tight ends, a running back like Nate Noel that you can move around, do some different things with. Those tight ends can run split zone that can get you going different directions and steal your eyes. Play action becomes big with the tight end group. Backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield, multiple backs. Now you can run two back if you want to. I mean, the Kirby Moore is going to have his hands full with even deciding what motions, what formations, and what personnel groupings to run for this Missouri offense. Now, part of this that maybe I come out of spring with a little less confidence in is part of what was going to make this offense so difficult to defend was Brady Cook's legs. He's a great runner. He's a great scrambler. Now, you go back 2 years ago, he probably left the pocket too early, but he pulls the ball down and he's deliberate about leaving, and I appreciate that. Now, you still want to be able to use that. Force that backside defensive end to stay at home and respect him keeping the football, or force them on a bootleg to be able to play flat with him and not necessarily rush the passer or go play the run. I do think because of where the quarterback room is right this second, and because of how Brady Cook has improved, you may see fewer designed runs by him. There's going to be more of an emphasis on protecting Brady Cook than maybe there was a year ago. And that might be okay because you have all these other weapons that we're talking about. Because you got a guy, Marquise Johnson, who's 5'11", 180, and has been clocked at over 22 miles an hour. I mean, the kid can flat burn. Josh Manning gives you that bigger physical guy, 6'2", 200 pounds, has a massive vertical leap. So now you got your big body receiver that you can use in the red zone or for 50-50 balls. They've got every type of guy that you want in this receiver room. You got a coordinator that knows how to move them around, a quarterback that's become very acclimated to being able to distribute the football quickly and know how to find his guys, a quarterback that has some mobility, multiple backs, a good offensive line, a play in the stretch that widens the defense out, forces you to play sideline to sideline, forces outside defenders to play up at times, which gives you huge advantages on play action and different things down the field. Another takeaway from the spring game, shot plays. Now, it's a spring game, so maybe this doesn't count for that. Maybe this doesn't equate to it, but it looks like Missouri is going to chunk the ball down the field a bunch this year. And with those weapons, why not? And an offensive line that protects, hey, if you can give us time, we got dudes that can go up and get it. Let's attack it. Now you force the defenses to make a decision. You're going to play back, or you're going to come play up against the stretch play. And our tight ends that can catch the ball underneath, our quarterback that can run it, and our good running backs. they are going to put defenses in conflict on a very regular basis. And I'm excited about what I saw from some of the personnel here on offense. I just think that the one thing you come away from this thinking is, all right, lack of confidence in Blood and Glover. Does Drew Pine come in and take that number two spot pretty quickly? Does that help some of the confidence to be able to let Brady Cook do a little bit more with his legs? I don't know. But either way, I don't think ultimately that matters. This is a team that should be pushing for a playoff spot with this offense. Which brings me to the defense, because people are going to say, all right, well, you lose your D coordinator, you lose a bunch of guys up front, which is true. Yeah, Darius Robinson is going to be gone. Realis George is gone. Jaden Jernigan is going to be gone. Niles Gaddy, Tyron Hopper. I mean, there's a lot of dudes up front in that front seven that are gone. And they were a handful last year. And we've talked multiple times last season about that Missouri D-line, how active they were, how much fun they were to watch. Well, the good news is, you're now bringing in a coordinator who maybe is not as aggressive, okay? Corey Batoon has been in the SEC before at Ole Miss. He's coached with Kane Womack. He coached with his dad. He's a little less aggressive than I think some of those guys are and than Blake Baker is, but he still has it in his arsenal. And you're going to get a lot of 4-2-5. You get a little bit of 3-4. Watch for this new sort of 3-3 stack that he's running a little bit that they ran last year at South. Something that helps you with a lot of RPO teams, helps you with teams that want to survey the field a little bit more. That can be a big benefit there. Also, they run a lot of vision coverage, which is basically teaching DBs to operate based on the quarterback's eyes. And they've had a ton of success taking the football away with that. So maybe less quarterback pressures, but a chance to have as many takeaways and be able to force the turnovers that they did a year ago. Most of that coming, one, because they pressured so well, and two, because those corners were so aggressive last year. Like, losing Rakestraw, it's going to hurt. Losing Carlisle is going to hurt. But I do think you plug a couple of guys in that are going to be able to help. Let's start with the D-line. Okay, Zion Young comes in from Michigan State. Apparently, good character guy, hard worker. Has given him some things off the edge. I think he's a little bit nicked up late in spring, so we didn't see a ton of him in the spring game. He's going to be back. Also off the edge is going to be Darius Smith from Georgia. So you go try to see some of Darius Smith when you see he's transferring to Missouri, and you can't really find a whole lot on him. I put this Missouri spring game on this morning. Holy hell, I see 19 on the field, and his arm, he looks like he got an NBA wingspan. His arms are going down to his kneecaps, and I thought to myself, that must be the Georgia guy, because physically, there's only a couple of teams that get guys that look like that. Also, I'm hearing that he had an amazing spring. He has track speed. He's gone from 225 to 246 already. He's been clocked at over 20 miles per hour on the GPS. I'm also told that if you were to run it out, as far as not the 40, but like 100, that far, maintaining speed for that long of a distance, he'd probably be one of the fastest guys on the team, not on the defense. So he's going to be big time, man. Like, he's got that wingspan. He had a couple good pass rush moves in the game. He gets those arms extended. He's got a good stab. I'm excited to see what Darius Smith can do in this defense, because he just looks like a freak show. And he is the way God intended edge defenders to look that are going to rush the passer. So obviously the five-star William Namari, who's going to be coming in, might be able to help here as well. But I'm not going to pretend like I know a bunch about high school players. I just know he's got a ton of hype. And I know that they like the way that he's looked when he comes to practice. Johnny Walker's back. So that's going to help. You may have a bigger defensive line, like more girth than you did a year ago, which could be huge because you could change some things up a little bit with how you manage it. The Sterling Webb kid, the Chris McClellan from Florida did some good things in this game. I saw him stymie some runs, get in the backfield just a little bit, do some nice things. Marquise Gracial, saw him in the backfield some, taking on offensive line, a little strike and shed. He did a couple of good things. Austin Firestone had a couple of good pass rush wins off the edge. He's a little bit lighter than some of these other guys we're talking about, but he could give you some depth and he could give you some good reps. I'm also told that Corey Flagg at linebacker has come in and been exactly what they needed. Locker room guy, motivator, leader, just a heady guy that knows the defense. He can get everybody lined up, and he can play. Had a pretty good spring. Kind of a cool deal, though, too, is you saw his brother get an interception in the game. Caleb Flagg at safety, he apparently has had a massive spring, and he's been doing some good things. So excited to see that and to see that he could be coming on as well to sort of help out in the secondary and see what he's going to be doing. I think the secondary still has decent numbers. Joseph Charleston's back. Trevez Johnson's back. Like, Philip Roche is back. They have some guys that have played. It'll be a little bit of a new defense. There'll be a little bit more ask of these safeties than there were a season ago. But I think you have enough up front that you can offset that. And I just don't think the defense is going to have to be as aggressive as it has been based on how good this offense is going to be. I think they're going to be able to shift gears offensively and play ball control. They're going to be able to play attack mode. They're going to be able to go fast. And here's the part about the offense that makes it so difficult. So when you add these extra tight ends that they have, you widen the surface. So your defensive ends are a little bit wider. Your linebackers are out a little bit wider. Then you run stretch play, okay? That takes everyone to the sideline. That gets your eyes going to the sideline. Well, what Missouri can do is run inside zone and stretch play with a splitter. So the tight end to the play side. So if we're going to the right, that play side tight end is going to come back to the left in sort of a motion and usually happens after the snap. Well, now your eyes are just kind of looking all over the place. Well, that's going to either freeze you or force you to run and take you out of the play. This is a massive advantage, and they can do this by alignment with really good blockers. Well, now with like a Norfleet out on the edge next to Armon Membu, you've got a solid edge that you're going to win almost every time. Well, now you don't have to run that play to the sideline. You can cut it up right outside the tackle, or if they get enough movement in front of the tackle. If the linebacker overruns it and they hit it in that B gap, well, now he's out the gate, north and south. There are just so many different things that open up based on what this system is and the pieces that they have to be able to run it. You talk about those splitters. Well, now line up a wide receiver and run split zone with him and spit it out to him really quick. The screen game is going to be deadly. Drinks had that going since he was at NC State. Like, all of this stuff begins to work together. And I think you have a nice power runner with Marcus Carroll and a home run hitter in Nate Noel. That's probably going to be able to hold up a little bit better than a lot of people thought. Are either of them going to get the workload that Schrader did? No, but I don't think they need to. And I think you're going to be a little bit bigger, be able to hold the point a little bit better up front, not have to attack as much with a D coordinator whose personality is just not as much that. Still has it, still will go after you at times, but just doesn't need to be a guy that's full attack mode every second of every day. The other thing that I heard coming out of Missouri Spring that I think is fantastic for them is they have had culture wins through the portal. So Corey Flagg at linebacker, Marcus Carroll and Nate Noel at running back, Caden Green at tackle, Toriondo Pride Jr. at corner, who I haven't even mentioned, out of Clemson, that had an interception and apparently has had a great spring, had a great pick in the spring game. And a guy who is super tweaked up, super athletic, and going to give them a big-time player out there on the edge. These guys have all come in and been appreciative and been hard workers and not been headaches and added more than just being a quality player to this football team. That's another thing that can kind of elevate you when a lot of people aren't really expecting you to. That could be something that goes Missouri's way this fall. Another guy in the spring that I would say kind of had some good reps, did some good things to potentially keep your eye on is Jamarion Wayne, a former wide receiver. So he's gone over to DB. This kid is 6'2", 195 pounds, played special teams last year, apparently has an 11-foot broad, runs 4.4. Like, he's a guy that can go, physically just gifted. He could be somebody that helps him out a ton in a different spot this year as well. So you got good character guys that are coming in. You got a ton of weapons on offense. You might be a little bit more physical at the point of attack on both sides of the ball as far as just overall size and strength and power. Now, that doesn't mean they have the motor and the energy and can shoot the gaps the way they did a year ago, but they could be different in better ways. So when you take all of that and you look at the fact that this team is going to push for a playoff spot, it all begins to make a lot of sense as to why a lot of people believe Missouri may be pushing for that playoff spot. And if you're wondering what to do, you know, if you think that, well, you probably want to know about Prize Picks. We are in March. March Madness getting set. Selection show happening today. Largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers instead of battling thousands of other players. That includes sharks and pros. You don't want to have to do that. You pick more or less than on a 2-6 player stat projection and just watch the winnings roll in. So if you want to go NBA, if you want to go NCAA tournament, if you want to go individuals, you can do all that. Like, I test my skills on Prize Picks. This is a season to make the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you want to go with conference tournaments and those things, and hopefully you won a lot with that. Now you'll be in the NCAA tournament. You can continue to roll there. Be a part of the action with Prize Picks for both the men's and women's NCAA tournaments. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. Just because football season is not here doesn't mean there's not a lot of ways to play. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday each Tuesday. So go do that. Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25%. And provide even more value. So here's how you can do it. It's easy. You go to prizepicks.com, download the app today, use promo code CUBE, C-U-B-E, and they're going to match your first $100. So prizepicks.com, put $100 in, you'll have $200 to get going on the NCAA tournament, which is going to be set today. So get that going. Don't forget about Prize Picks. All right, so when we move past everything that went through the spring and you project out a little bit further, you start to think about just what this Missouri team could be. I mentioned it earlier with the schedule. Six new head coaches on this schedule for the Missouri Tigers. 79% of the offense is back. Cook, Burden, Weiss, Marquise Johnson. Caden Green comes in, is going to be able to help. Maybe Drew Pine's going to be able to help if they need him at some point in time. They don't play a road game until October the 5th at A&M. So you got Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College at home. Vandy at home. That team should be sitting there undefeated with an open date before they travel to Texas A&M, who, yeah, they got a lot of talent, but they're still a first-year head coach and a lot of things are going to be new. Then they're at UMass. Only thing I don't like about being at UMass, which is a weird one, is you got Auburn at home the next week, which could be kind of dangerous. But then you go to Alabama, week off, Oklahoma at home, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, then Arkansas. Like, it's a very manageable schedule. There's reasons the expectations are where they are. And if they're not, you should probably get them there for this Missouri football team, because I felt like I got some good answers coming out of spring. And I saw some things in that spring game that I liked. Also brought to you by Blue Delta Jeans each and every week. Custom fit denim just for you. They can digitally fit these jeans now, and you can order them online. Go to BlueDeltaJeans.com. Tell them you heard about them right here on Cube Show. And listen, they're the best jeans that I've ever worn. I can dress them up. I can dress them down. Read and react. Every Monday night you see me, I'm wearing them there. I'm wearing them to church if I want to. Wear them date night. Blue Delta Jeans, the only pair of jeans you're ever going to need. Go check out all of our sponsors. We always appreciate Wickles Pickles and Prize Picks and all the guys for sponsoring each and every week. All right, so we're in the middle of our spring previews now. We'll get to a different team in the SEC each and every week, and we got to add Texas and Oklahoma this year, so we'll be doing that. Please subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. We always appreciate that. Give us that 5-star rating if you're listening on podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with another spring preview next week right here on Cube Show.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.